It's Talk and It's All About You. It's by For and About Women Radio Network. And it's time for the Mother-Daughter Club Show with host Kathy Gogolewski.
The Mother-Daughter Club. Who are we? We are you. Mother, daughter, and granddaughter. We represent that unique bond that exists between generations of women. We have raised each other, nurtured each other, shared our dreams, our treasures, our worries and anxieties with each other. We have argued and disagreed, but we have never stopped loving. We come in all sizes and ages and colors. Who are we? We are you.
Hello, and thanks for joining us. This is the Mother Daughter Club radio show, and we have a great show planned for you today. Tim Link, a pet communicator, will join us with some callers who have some very special questions for him. So stay with us. The Mother Daughter Club celebrates the family of women. It is for all our sisters, aunts, girlfriends, mothers, and daughters in our shared global community. We frequently have male guests on the show, however, as is the case today, but whoever our guests are, the show is for you. We use it as a platform to address topics that matter to us all. And while we talk about many things, always we make every effort to speak and listen to the filter of the heart. Our guests understand this language or they wouldn't be here. It is how you know you can take their messages to heart. Our intention is to express goodwill toward everyone, and that, dear listener, means you. We believe in the everlasting beauty of the soul, and we invite you to come with us as we explore the many paths that lead us to this understanding. The Mother-Daughter Club is a segment of By, For, and About Women Radio Network, and this is your host, Kathy Gogolewski, ready to introduce you to some wonderful guests, including an introduction to the very funny Amy Mullis, author of the blogspot Mind Over Mullis. Before we do that, we're going to hear from our animal communicator, so let me introduce him to you, and then we'll say hello. Tim Link is president and CEO of Wagging Tales, that's T-A-L-E-S, and he's also the author of a book by the same name. He is a practicing animal communicator. What is that? Is he an animal whisperer? Can he send and receive messages to and from animals? Yes, I think so, but we'll let him tell you more about that. As part of his passion for helping animals, Tim also mastered Reiki, an ancient art of energy healing, which he uses on animals. He has been featured on television, including the shows Mike and Juliet and Good Day Atlanta, and in many radio shows and newspapers. He spent 20-plus successful years in sales management for the telecommunications industry when, in February of 2004, he discovered he had a special gift to communicate with animals. It came as a big surprise to him, and we'll have to hear about what happened. He found, as he practiced, that the gift was growing stronger to the point where he wanted to fully embrace it. So he opened Wagging Tales in November of 2007, and now he communicates between animals and their owners and performs Reiki energy healing on pets. Tim was also a volunteer and past president of the Humane Society of Forsyth County, which is a no-kill shelter. I'm sure you're as anxious to meet him as I am, so please open your hearts and minds to receive Tim Link. Tim, welcome to the Mother-Daughter Club show.
Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure being here.
It's just wonderful to have you. We're just very honored to have you on the show. First of all, maybe you can explain to us, what is your gift? Can you explain how it works? And do you actually read animals' minds, and can you send them messages?
Well, actually, you know, it's a communication with animals. So I am able to connect with animals at a deeper level than perhaps some people can, and allow them to share with me information and talk to me, basically, in a manner that they feel most comfortable with. And that's how they're communicating with me on a daily basis. So I can ask them questions that you have of your animals. They'll mm-hmm. give me information back. We'll try to determine exactly what that information is. Sometimes it's very clear, and other times we have to sort of peel back that onion to determine what that's all about.
Uh-huh.
And in return, they'll share information back to me that they want you to know, things that are important to them so they can have a great life with you.
Oh, well, that's wonderful. Do these messages come to you through feelings, or do you get a picture in your mind, or do you just sense it? I mean, how do words actually appear to you?
Yeah, well, you know, it is. It's really just like conversations we have with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the only difference is with humans, you know, we rely so heavily on our spoken word
mm-hmm.
that often we don't allow ourselves to connect at a deeper level to share feelings and pictures and emotions and things of this sort. Our animals aren't caught up that way because obviously they don't talk in a language like we do. They talk in a telepathic language or an intuitive language, and that's how they share information back and forth with each other.
Oh, that's interesting.
So, yeah, and so in my situation, you know, I'm able to connect at that level with them. So, you know, each individual animal, they all have their own unique personalities.
Just like people.
Just like people.
Mm-hmm.
And some are very, very talkative. They share a lot of different information. They'll share it in a lot of different formats.
Mm-hmm.
And others are a little bit more subdued. You know, others will share just maybe one or two bits of information, maybe in just one or two different mm-hmm. formats. And that's mm-hmm. the only way they want to communicate with.
So it's just like people. You can't force anyone to communicate with you.
Exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
And we just let them flow. But the nice thing about the animals, you know, they're more than willing to communicate. I've never had a situation where one hasn't communicated with me.
Mm.
Yeah, because they like that forum. They know it's an opportunity to be able to share something back with their human companions and the people mm-hmm. they love. And so they honor that opportunity, just like I honor the opportunity to be able to do it for them.
Oh, that's wonderful. It sounds like they have an advantage over humans in that we have this filter where we filter out these impressions and everything relies on the three-dimensional communication and the spoken word and so forth. But because they don't do that, they're more in touch with just pure communication.
Absolutely. You know, when we're born, we have this ability to connect at an intuitive level or a telepathic level.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when a child, a small infant, is first born and it hasn't learned its vocabulary, hasn't formed its language skills, you know, of course it can cry and coo and do all the things that the low infants
mm-hmm.
can do. But that real connection with its mother, we'll say, that intuitive connection, that mother's intuition,
mm-hmm.
when she knows exactly what little Timmy wants, when she knows mm-hmm. what he's trying to tell her,
mm-hmm.
and you ask the mother, you know, well, how do you know that? And
she just says, knows.
Yeah, I got this feeling, or I got mm-hmm. this picture in my head that
mm-hmm.
there's something to happen. Well, that's what we're talking about. And so when we're children, when we're small infants, we can communicate at that level. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. when we get to be, you know, 5, 6 years old, and we go to school, and we learn our vocabulary, and we learn to socialize in the acceptable ways that we usually socialize as humans, mm-hmm. we get away from that. We forget all mm-hmm. about it and mm-hmm. lose touch with that.
So what a treat to be able to talk to the animals and hear them, to actually hear them, and to be able to for them to hear you and know it. That's just, to me, an incredible gift. And I know we have some callers for you today who want to ask you about their pets. So before we get started in that, because I know they're anxious to get on, how did you get started in pet communicating?
You know, it really came as a surprise to me. You know, I had been working as a telecom executive, and my responsibility from a career standpoint was to take new technology and make major presentations to CEOs of corporations
mm-hmm.
and convince them to spend $20-30 million worth of their money on my technology.
Mm-hmm.
And so I traveled the world. I had clients from all over the world and traveled the world presenting this new technology to the cell phone manufacturers. And that was sort of what I worked up to. And I climbed up to, you know, a pretty high level within a major corporation. I was director and vice president of a major corporation. And
wow.
To my surprise, in February 2004, my wife and I went to a workshop. And the workshop was just a little half-day workshop, which was designed to sort of, first of all, help you clear your mind and open your heart. And what I mean by that is, you know, clearing your mind, getting rid of all that clutter that's in your mind, all that monkey mind, as they call it,
mm-hmm.
all the little honeydews and mm-hmm. sticky notes you put on your brain that you have to do. And, you know, how do you get out, how do you clear that out, and then how do you center yourself and open yourself up to even possibly having a conversation with animals? And the second part of the workshop was to focus on the actual animals. We'd get pictures of animals. There was about 12 people in the class, and we all had four or five pictures of our pets, and we had four or five questions from each of the pictures. So, you know, we had 100 or so questions that were put out there, and we would go into our quiet zone, and we'd clear our minds and open our hearts, and we would ask those questions verbally as well as visually. And there were also some cats and dogs of the host family that was hosting the workshop. They had their animals there, so we got to work with live animals. And we would ask them questions. And the questions at that time, you know, were pretty basic. You know, things like, where does Spot like to sleep? What's Fluffy's favorite toy? You know, little things like that. But the key thing behind it is the owners were the only ones, the human companions of the animals were the only ones that knew the answers to these questions. So we would calm ourselves down, open our minds, open our hearts. We'd connect with the animals. We'd ask them these questions, and then we would see what we'd get in return. And we would write it down, and then we'd compare notes just to see how close we were. And I thought, well, this is going to be kind of fun. It's going to be kind of a hoot to see what we come up with.
You weren't taking it too seriously at that point then.
No, you know, I take it seriously enough to the fact that, you know, I wanted to learn.
Others have a gift.
Yeah, exactly. I wanted to learn, but the gift hadn't uncovered itself. And, you know, I was taking it serious enough to know what I had to do, but I didn't really go into this thinking that, you know, I was going to come out of it as an animal communicator. Little did I know the information. As I asked these questions, I'd receive information back. At that time, it was a form of just a couple of words. I would hear the words that they were, you know, in a voice from the animals, or I'd see a picture. I'd see a little picture of what they're trying to share with me, and I'd write down the information, and I shared that back with the human companions of the animals. And lo and behold, every single one of them came through exactly correct. I was 100% correct on each one of them.
Wow, so that was a surprise to you. You weren't expecting that. So then you realized you had a gift, and you exercised it. It got stronger. As you began to practice, it got stronger, right?
It definitely did. You know, I thought it was really cool. I thought it was kind of I wasn't really sure what to do with it. I thought, well, maybe I'm just on a roll. You know, maybe I should go play the lottery today because I'm hitting all these things. Maybe I'm just on a roll today. I wasn't really sure what to do with it, so I kept it on the lowdown. You know, I kept it quiet for a while and continued my career path, and I worked with my own animals. And when I did this, the gift continued to grow.
Mm-hmm.
And a few friends found out about it, and I worked with their pets, and the gift grew further. And then later on, started working with rescue organizations and helping them out and volunteering my time there. And by that point, you know, I was receiving all the pictures.
You had a lot of experience. Yeah, you began to trust your own gift.
Yes, as you trust the gift and as you open yourself up to it, then more of it comes through.
Fantastic.
And finally, in 2007, I finally took that leap of faith and left corporate America and started wagging tails. And
you followed your passion.
Followed the passion, and I think it's my purpose for being here is to, you know, to give the animals a voice and to help you build those best relationships possible.
And we are so grateful that you have chosen this path. And I know that we have some callers who are interested in asking you their questions. And you have viewed videos and pictures, right, of these animals?
Yeah, I've got videos, some wonderful videos of a couple of the animals, a cat and a dog, and then a couple of kitty pictures. So,
so this helps you connect specifically with that animal when you see a video or a picture?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it works as a sort of a focal point. Mm-hmm. You know, sort of, when I look into their eyes, it's that old saying, you know, the eyes are the windows of the soul. So it helps me connect with them a lot deeper than if I didn't have the picture.
I still can
do it without the picture, but it's helpful to have it. And then I get all these wonderful, beautiful pictures of all these beautiful furry babies and feathered babies. And
you have your collection.
Exactly.
Well, I know you have a book, Wagging Tails, which I have been reading, and I so enjoy the stories in it. And you have a picture of each animal as well with the story. And it's really a delight. I really enjoyed reading that. It gave me a real sense of what is possible. So, and I do recommend that book to our listeners. It's Wagging Tails by Tim Link. And we'll talk about, before we go off the show, we'll talk about where they can get that, okay? Now I'd like to turn you over to our first caller, Gloria, who would like to ask you a couple questions about her two cats. Gloria?
Hi, Tim. Thank you so much for taking this call.
Oh, my pleasure.
And Panther, my actually, the two cats that I have, I picked up on Valentine's Day a year ago as a gift because we had two other cats that lived to 18 and about 16 and a half who had both died. And so we waited about 6 months, and then I picked up these two from the shelter. And they're both boys. Puma is kind of a tiger stripe, leopard-looking, medium-haired cat, and Panther is totally black. And what we noticed almost right away when they came was we didn't know which one, but they love to chew on wires. And we've since determined that Puma is the one, the long-haired one, who is chewing on wires, and he's gone through two telephones and about six of my computer headsets. And just last night we came home, and I had set my mouse aside, went over to my computer to turn it on, and then went to plug in the mouse, and that wire was chewed through. So, and Panther chews on bottle tops, like champagne bottles with the aluminum and, you know, the door stops that keep the door from banging the wall, metal tubing, like a laundry basket, and it just... you know, I'm a healer. I'm a soul communicator and healer, and just can't seem to work with this issue with them. So I was real happy when Kathy told me about you.
All right. Well, appreciate that. Well, they're beautiful kitties. Well, let me ask you that. First of all, I'm picking up some static energy, and what I call static energy is there's some internal things like some a kidney issue, bladder issue, something of that sort. This is on Puma. Puma. Puma's the tiger cat, correct?
Yes.
Okay, got that right. Has Puma had any issues with any urinary tract infections, bladder infections,
no.
Anything of the sort? Okay. Have you had any urinalysis taken on him recently?
No.
Okay. How is he? Is he using the litter box on a regular basis?
Yeah. What I have noticed though is that they're drinking a lot more water than usual.
Okay. And that could be, I mean, that could be a lot of things with that. I mean, obviously increase in water, you know, in thirst. Obviously it's summertime, but they're indoor only kitties, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So that shouldn't be a problem. It's not as nearly as dry during the summer if they're an indoor kitty. So I wouldn't think that'd be the problem. I'm really getting some real static around the kidney and bladder area. You know, I don't want to alarm you too much, but I think there's something going on within the kidneys. It could be something that just needs to be supported better, maybe some supplements to support the kidneys a little bit better. It could be a diet change. What food regimen are they on?
IMs for weight loss. They both got a little bit overweight.
Okay. All right. So one of the things here's what I would recommend. An opportunity you may have next time you take them in, you may want to just get a urine analysis, make sure that there's no kidney issues going on. Kidney issues, if there are some kidney issues going on, you know, that could be excessive drinking of water. A lot of times it's excessive eating. They always seem hungry.
Yeah, they do.
Okay. And sometimes they're lethargic. Those type of things usually are some indicators. You know, I'm not a veterinarian, but it's when I feel these things and I see these things, it's a good indicator to me to get it checked out.
Okay.
So I think there may be something going on.
Are you receiving any messages about the wires?
Well, part of the wire situation is if they are having some problems internally, physically, they're going to act out and try to get your attention in some fashion. And if there is a problem with the diet itself, if the diet's not lending enough nutrients or support that they need, they're going to be they'll start chewing on things. That's one of the things they do. Dogs do this as well, and they start chewing on things they aren't supposed to chew on. So I think for both of them, but definitely with Puma, I do feel some physical things going on, and I think it's part of your problem with the wire situation. You may even want to try to supplement the diet with some fresh fresh foods as well. Consult with your veterinarian, but things like fresh carrots, green beans, squash, those type of things as a supplement to increase the fiber in their diet to make them feel a little bit better.
Okay.
Now, do you spend a lot of time on the computers itself? Okay. And how much dedicated one-on-one time do you have? You give energy to people, correct?
Yes.
Okay. How much time do you give energy to them?
Dedicated energy, probably not that much. They're in the house and they're around and, they're petted and loved when they come around, but to actually take a block of time, I would say no.
Okay. Well, here's what I'm picking up, just specifically on the wires. Panther likes to follow Puma's lead, so if Puma's doing it, Panther's going to be doing it too.
Okay.
So just let you know that. And with Puma, I think Puma is actually, from what he's showing me, is there's a lot of time spent with on the computer and with headsets and giving healing and doing your work, which is great, and he wants to be part of that. But
he jumps on my lap.
There you go. So he's trying to be your muse and try to be part of that situation, which is great. The one thing we want to make sure we're doing, though, is that when we're doing healing work for people over the phone or in person and your animals are around in the same room, we want to make sure we clear out the room and clear the animals at the same time. So make sure they're not picking up that energy, just like you would with yourself when you're doing energy healing. When you're done, you do a cleansing method, I'm assuming. You want to do the same thing with your animal, cleanse that out. And he's actually trying to tell you to slow it down a little bit.
Those are such good words, and I know that I'm taking notes, and it's good for all of us to hear because there's information in there for every pet owner. But I know that we have our other caller. We have another caller waiting to talk to you, Tim. Her name is Rose, and you saw the video of Paloma, her cat. And that video, as I understand, was taken just before she or just after they got back from a trip.
Yeah.
That is correct. Hello,
so this is Rose.
Tim.
Hi, Rose.
Hello.
Hi, Rose.
Well, thanks so much, Tim. As you can see from the video, that is my 3-year-old domestic short hair cat, Paloma. She is the only cat in our household, and we refer to her as the fur baby. So that said, I'm actually 7.5 months pregnant. I'm expecting in October, and there will be a real baby in the house. And thus far, I've been trying to get her used to the idea, but, she jumps in the crib. She seems to know she's not supposed to, and I just want to put the energy out there to let her know that, there will be some big changes in routine coming along, but maybe is there anything that we can do to make, this transition easier for her?
Yeah, well, definitely. She already knows about it. She already knows because I know you've been talking about it, and obviously the physical signs that the baby's coming along. But she thinks the baby's there because that's first thing when you said that she's your only baby, the only fur baby. She was quick to correct you. So I was getting ready to say something when you mentioned that you were pregnant. So that's very interesting. So she's already aware of it and knows about it. I think the thing I would do with her is make sure that you're telling her more about it as the process comes along. So what she needs to expect out of it, what she needs to do. So I'm a big proponent of talking to our animals out loud, talking to them verbally, because I do believe they understand the words that we're saying. In addition, when we say words out loud, we automatically visualize those words. We visualize the picture of what we are saying. And animals are very visual creatures, and they'll pick up on that. And the third thing is when we talk through something, whether we're talking to another human or whether we're talking to an animal, we feel better about the situation. Our energy lifts up, and animals will respond to that positive energy, and she'll follow along with that. She'll respond positively to it. So I would go ahead and start talking to her. And when you're talking to her, make sure you're talking to her in the following manner. Make sure you're first explaining to her what the situation is. Secondly, what she needs to do about it, what do you expect from her,
okay.
And most importantly, why is it going to be a good thing? Why in the world would it be a good thing for her? Because if there's no perk in it, then, you know, she won't she won't respond to it. So we got to make sure that we're responding accordingly to that.
Would it be fair to ask for the cat's support of the baby, that she can be like a baby protector, or is that appropriate?
Absolutely. Yeah, give her a job to do. That's absolutely a good, great thing. And start talking to her now about, you know, that the baby, I know you know the baby is here, but it won't physically be sharing our house for another month and a half. So for now, I need you to help Mommy out, give me lots of love, and listen to what Mommy has to say, because this is going to make me very happy. Okay? And she'll start picking that up. And then when the baby does come along, then you're explaining a very similar situation. You know, I know you like getting up into the crib to see what's going on with the new baby, but I need you to avoid doing that, because that will make the baby upset and it's not safe for you. So this is going to be, you know, this will be a good thing, because we'll be able to spend more time with the baby by you staying out of the crib. You know, things of that sort. You can word it however you feel most comfortable. But you're constantly talking to her and giving her expectations and letting her know what's going on now and what she needs to do and why is it going to be a good thing.
Okay, 3 points. Those are good words. Great words. Thank you so much. We have just enough time for one more. This would be my dog. And I just couldn't resist when I realized that I was going to have an interview with you. I could not resist. I usually don't include myself or the callers, but this is about my dog, Dilly. And you saw her video where she was barking jingle bells, sort of. And we have caught Dilly peeing on the carpet since we got her several years ago. And we told her no, of course, and she stopped. You know, she would stop for a long time, and then we'd find another spot. And she continued to sneak around and pee, eventually leaving her mark in every carpeted room of the house. Now, we have a cat who she is not allowed to chase, and she's fascinated with this cat. And a good number of pee spots have turned up next to the spot in the living room where the cat likes to sleep. And we didn't notice it, unfortunately, until it really smelled, because we don't use a living room very much. And after finding those pee spots, I wondered if the cat was the pee culprit for those spots, because they were near her rest area, though we've never caught her. I think it might be Dilly, but I'd love to know. First of all, I'd like to know if you can ask Dilly if she made those pee spots, and if we can ask her why she does that, and how can we get her to stop?
All right. Well, Dilly did, reluctantly, Dilly said yes.
Aww.
Yeah, Dilly did do it.
I knew it.
Yeah. And when she, also with, the other thing I'm picking up is, you know, with Dilly, it seems to be, when there's a pee spot, is it an isolated type of thing? I mean, after you clean it up, she doesn't go back to that, Dilly doesn't go back to that same spot and do it again?
I show her spots, and I talk to her about it, and I tell her no, and she knows that she's not supposed to, and we, you know, conversely, when we go outside and she goes, she gets praised every time. So she knows outside pee time is that's what, when she does her pee. And I do get that she understands that. And I don't see a pattern, really. And I don't catch her. Like, often I won't find the spot until it's, you know, months old. So I don't really have a handle on, you know, the pattern or why. I was hoping maybe you could ask her.
Yeah, she said she does it. It's part of a marking thing, actually, for her. That was the reason I was asking. You know, if there's
that
a change
with the cat.
Yeah, the cat. She knows she's not. You know, Dilly knows that she's supposed to leave the cat alone. So you know, Dilly does a good job with that. But she's got to do something. And that little something is leave a little present behind. So, you know, it's a marking type thing. She feels that that's something she needs to do. So even if you clean something up or if you clean the carpet, whatever it may be, there's a decent chance in her mind right now that she needs to go back and mark that spot again. So what we want to do is we want to go back to that explaining thing. When she goes outside and does her business and she gets praised, fantastic. That's a great way to do it. There's other things you can do, obviously. Do you walk her on a leash at all?
Yes.
Okay, good. So walking her on a leash, make sure she wears herself out, make sure she gets you know, plenty of opportunity to relieve herself, you know, all that great stuff.
So she gets walked usually every day. Every now and then we miss one.
All right. We'll try to get consistent with that because that's the routines are the key. With our animals, we want them to behave. We got to have a good routine because they love the routines.
Yeah.
And then you want to talk again. Mm-hmm. You know, praise her when Dilly does it correctly outside, but whenever there's whenever you find a puddle, even if it's a fresh one, it's not going to do any good at that point to scold.
Mm-hmm.
So the best thing to do is explain it once again, what the situation is. You know, Dilly, I know sometimes you want to mark the area, but that's not appropriate. What I need you to do is go outside only. Only go outside and do your business. Only go outside and potty, because this is going to be make Mommy very happy.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, this is going to make it less stressful for you, whatever it may be.
And probably it wouldn't hurt to have that conversation with her a few times so that it can sink in.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And then when she goes out and she does her business correctly, especially talk to her before you're going to go out, and then when she goes out and does her business, then you've got, you know, you've got to gauge to say, hey, you see what I'm talking about? That's how you do it.
Yeah.
And you want to avoid the key thing when you're talking to them, I do want to stress this, is animals will try their best to deflect negative energy, and using negative words like no, not, stop, and yelling, those things, they'll do their best to try to deflect it. If it's continuous, they'll start to absorb it. So one thing you want to make sure you're doing, that when you're talking to them and you're trying to get them to correct a situation, don't use words like no and not. So, for instance, you don't want to say, Dilly, don't pee on the floor. Because Dilly will deflect that don't in here pee on the floor.
Well, that's exactly what I've been saying, so that's good to tell me.
There you go. So let's avoid that. And it's difficult because we use so many negative words in our normal vocabulary, it's hard not to use them. But, yeah, we want to tell her that only use the potty outside.
But I can explain to her about the pee marks. I can say, you know, I could explain to her and talk to her and give her that perk, as you say, and how much we appreciate it when she does go outside, and she's such a good girl, things like that. So I can talk about the pee spot so she understands what I'm saying, but it's not negative. Is that right?
Yep, you got it.
No good. Well, that's just great. And just one last thing on that, since for our listeners, is this the most common reason, the marking that dogs will pee indoors?
Well, no.
It's always different?
There's so many reasons for it. You know, there's so many, and really each individual animal has their, as we said, their own unique personality. So they're going to have their own reason for doing it. And it could be anything from marking. It could be stress in the household. It could be a change in the household. Someone's moved out. Someone's moved in. It could be that you brought a new animal in without getting cleared with the present animals. So there's a lot of different reasons.
Okay.
But, you know, a marking's one indicator, and that's what Dilly was sharing.
Well, I'm sure that our listeners, there'll be listeners that want to get in touch with you and find out why their particular animals do what they do. Is there a way that they can do that? I know that I recommended your book, too. Maybe you can tell us where they can find that.
Absolutely. So you can find out more about the book, Wagging Tails, Every Animal Has a Tail. It's available in all major bookstores and on your favorite online retailer. Or you can go to my website at wagging-tails.com. That's WAGGING-TALES.com. And you can order a customized autographed copy, and I'll be glad to send that out to you.
Oh,
but
fantastic.
It's a wonderful book. It's, you know, it's a collection of 32 stories of animals
it's
I've worked
fun.
With,
yeah,
and it has 24 helpful hints, and there are two tips that similar to what we talked about today.
Okay, that's wonderful. All good news, and I want to thank you so much for joining us today. And Rose and Gloria, thank you, too, for being with us. And that, dear listeners, concludes another Mother Daughter Club radio show interview. Thanks so much for being with us. Please stay tuned for the very funny Amy Mullis, author of the blog Mind Over Mullis. She's up next with a short from her column at blogspot.com. And I hope you'll join us again for our future guests on the Mother Daughter Club. We have a wonderful selection of podcasts, too, in our archives ready for you to download and listen to at your convenience. Tune in to Lisa Nichols, featured in the movie The Secret, as she chats about navigating the ups and downs of her life. Listen to Donna Markova, author of Random Acts of Kindness, Dr. and Master Zhigong Sha, world-renowned healer and founder of the Institute of Peace and Enlightenment. You can listen to psychic messenger Terry Jay, who will help you communicate with those who have passed. And you won't want to miss our interview with Jen Doris as she talks about how her cancer has taught her to live her life with an uncommon joy. Her story is as stunning as it is inspiring. We have interviews with feng shui experts, dream weavers, and many, many more. You can even burn a podcast onto a CD and listen in your car on the way to work. We think there is a show just for you. There is no fee for this service.
Please join us again and tell a friend about the Mother-Daughter Club. Stay with us now. Amy Mullis is next, and this is your host, Kathy Gogoleski, and you are listening to the Mother-Daughter Club radio show.
And now, here's Amy Mullis, as promised, with a fun read about getting ready for a vacation, after which I think you may need one. Here's Amy.
I lobbed a blackened cabbage toward the trash can and groaned as it bounced off the side and spun across the linoleum. It sounded like an 18-wheeler losing a retread at 90 miles an hour. I need a vacation. You need a free-throw coach. That was a terrible shot. Bill and I have discovered that teamwork activities are a cheap form of marriage counseling. Cleaning the refrigerator may not seem like an exercise in compromise, but we found that many of life's problems pale in comparison to a quicksand patch of Mrs. Butterworth that's about to claim the life of a helpless pot roast. We are presently in the kitchen, seated side by side in wooden chairs, facing what he calls the rottery. Three shelves of time-worn tuna, meatloaf meltdown, and a swamp of sweet tea that could support a pontoon brigade. The whole affair has the engaging scent of a garbage barge on an extended search for a home port. I handed him a largish hunk of something that once resembled cheese. "Okay, Michael Jordan, your shot." He banked the object off a handy Labrador napping nearby. "Swoosh, that's how you do it." "No fair, you had an assist." "And you had a vacation. Remember last month? You stayed home for a whole week." 5 days at home with two flu-ridden kids is not a vacation. It's an internship. I can now identify five previously unrecorded reactions of teenagers to foul-tasting prescription medication. I'll have to admit I've never seen a cell phone used quite that way before. Bill attempted a three-point shot with a stray Brussels sprout. The Labrador intercepted the object with a snap on the downward arc, swallowed the thing in one gulp, and looked accusingly at his pop. He hates Brussels sprouts. "Sorry, buddy." With a sigh, he settled his chin on the floor between his paws. "That's the trouble with dogs. They'll forgive you for anything. That's why we take them on trips in the car instead of our wives. If you would act nice, I'd let you ride to the dump with your head out the window, too." I popped him with a wilted celery stalk. He pulled a Tupperware bowl from the bottom shelf. The lid was puffed up like a chef's hat, and a peculiar life form was clinging to the inside like a fruit bat. "Have we ever had anything that color? I don't think they make food that color." "Well, they say that what doesn't kill you makes you stronger." He lobbed the offending container toward the trash can. The bowl dropped to the bottom of the can like a laser-targeted depth charge. The lid spun for a minute before rocking slowly back into place. We watched silently, ready to run if an explosion seemed imminent. Bill leaned back with the self-assured air of an NBA star at a post-game interview. "But if it's packed in Tupperware and the top is rising like a shot from center court, save yourself the painful learning experience and throw the whole thing away." We closed the refrigerator door and stood up. "So now can I have a vacation?" "Sure, come with me." He picked up the trash can and held it at arm's length. "I'll take you to the dump." "Now that's foul." He loaded the car and I watched as he headed down the driveway with the big lab perched happily in the passenger seat. I dropped in the chair at my computer to Google exotic vacation destinations. The cat padded across the desk and nestled in my lap. "Well, kitty," I purred as I typed in a verification, "if life is a basketball game, I'm about to be charged with traveling." We finally conjured up the nerve and the money to spend a weekend at the beach. It's hard for us to get away since there's no immediate family left that's willing to stay with our darling doggies, oh yes, and the cats, like they're not old enough to take care of themselves, and boy do we have nerve thinking they need a chaperone. But over the years we did without luxuries like frozen pizza and liver mush to scrape together enough cash to hire Guido, who usually moonlights at Happy Valley Sanatorium, to stay the weekend at our home. Here, then, are instructions for the pet sitter while we're on vacation. There are a number of animals here. It is important to remember that dogs and cats have been bred over the centuries expressly to tell lies about the amount of food they are allowed to consume. Here's the routine. This section applies to the mostly Labradors, which is the state dog breed of South Carolina. That's not official, mind you, but everybody knows it's true because, according to a scientific poll taken at the Doggy Doo Canine Emporium and Park last Tuesday after the Milkbone truck came by, everyone in South Carolina has been owned by such a beast at some point in their lives. The mostly labs are the ones most likely to try and intentionally mislead you about the frequency, amount, and duration of mealtimes. The Mostly Labrador Breed Club flag bears a picture of a cookie and a loophole. By the time you get here, all the animals will have had their morning potty break and will have eaten breakfast, which they will lie about having. If animals hadn't been fed in weeks, they would be dead, not rolling about the living room floor looking like a can of biscuits about to pop open. The vet mentioned the word blubber at our last appointment, which is not, to the best of my recollection, a word associated with starving animals. They can eat again at supper time, which is not the time of day marked by finishing breakfast. No, they do not need a snack. No, not even a little one. No, they do not need a cookie. Yes, I'm aware of the cuteness factor. Yes, I know about the big brown eyes. Okay, maybe one cookie. They'll need to go out when you get here. They can stay out until they get hot and want to come back in. That should take at least until they reach the bottom step. Repeat as necessary until you consider replacing the kitchen door with one that revolves at a steady clip. If they go missing, they'll be at the neighbor's house begging for food. They're dogs. They don't know Halloween comes only once a year, especially since the neighbor has a treat for them every single day, twice on the weekend. However, they're not supposed to beg for food, so if you catch them trick-or-treating at regular intervals throughout the afternoon, you may speak sharply. They won't listen to you, but at least you'll feel you've tried. Be aware that their feelings will be hurt, and they'll gaze balefully at you like you've taken their last cookie. It's okay. They weren't supposed to have one anyway. The Atkins diet people would go broke with spokesmodels like these. If they start to go out of the driveway, call out, "Stay in the driveway!" in a cheerful tone, and they'll run to you like lost sheep found. Keep some of their regular kibble in your pocket and give them a bite when they're good. In that way, a few kibble should last the entire time we're gone. Sometimes they give in to temptation if a squirrel or bunny across the street is particularly insistent in their taunting, but for the safety of all concerned, not the bunny or squirrel who have no need to even break a nervous sweat, the dog should stay out of the road. It's a quiet enough neighborhood, but I've come down with a nasty case of laryngitis yelling for them to come back in when they're in hot pursuit of a stray butterfly. Around 6:30, for supper, both the big dogs get two scoops from the bucket, and Lucy, the dachshund diva, gets one. The amount of time it takes to consume the food is in no way related to the amount of food each should receive. Hungadin could suck down the bits like a hoover as you pour it into the bowl, while Whatzit must take the time to lick up stray crumbs before they evaporate mysteriously into the air or into someone else's drooling maw. Still, two cups apiece is the rule. Those who overindulge have to be helped when it comes to establishing limits. Just say no is not a viable slogan for a beast who stoops to begging for the rights to lick the butter dish. You'll need to put Lucy's food down next to you so as to fend off the big dogs. They'll circle her and every now and then try to snag a bite, but since they're afraid of her, they'll mostly try to convince you that she is not hungry and said they could have her supper. After supper, they'll need to go out again. They like to roughhouse inside, but if they get too wild, you can take them outside. They're like small boys and will often resort to biting each other's ear just to see who squeals first. If you walk up and down the driveway, they'll probably start chasing each other, unless it's hot. Then they'll follow you up and down the driveway and whine and complain. They usually do more chasing after dark when it's cool, but they're both afraid of dog-eggity monsters, and you'll have to stay out with them as a motivational and protective influence. Usually about 20 minutes will be all you can stand. Make sure they go out again at bedtime, but that's not a big playing time. If you don't make them go out, they'll be really insistent to speak with you personally at about 5:30 a.m., which I know from experience is way before dawn this time of year. In the morning, same deal food-wise. Two cups for big doggies, one for Lucy. But divas don't breakfast well, and she will probably ignore it and want to be served brunch instead later in the morning. A word about Lucy. She's half dachshund and half bull shark. She'll put up with a certain amount of ignorance on your part, but if you expect her to do anything she considers demeaning, such as listening to baby talk or fetching a ball, she'll take your arm off up to the elbow. It's important to remember that if you can see her teeth, she is not smiling. As for the cats, feed them. They'll lie too because it's expected, but if you keep their bowl full of Friskies, then really, what right do they have to complain? But be careful of the gray one. I suspect he and Lucy have the same bull shark father. If all else fails, toss him some catnip and close the door. What happens in the litter box stays in the litter box. Thank you for your assistance, and I understand completely that our agreement expressly forbids me from using your real name.
I think the dog sitter's going to need a vacation after that. You'll find more of Amy at her blog at Mind Over Mullis. That's M-U-L-L-I-S. And if you Google Mind Over Mullis, you will find her blog. And that's it for another Mother Daughter Club show. Thanks so much for being with us. This is your host, Kathy Gogoleski, wishing you all the very best. Ciao for now.
You've been listening to the Mother Daughter Club radio show here on 5-4 and About Women Network.